Welcome to the Steps 8 and 9 Self-Discipline and Love meeting. My name is Corey, and I'm a compulsive overeater and your speaker for this meeting.
Hi, Corey.
Hello. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones and other electronic devices be turned off. And it tells me to pause and wait while you turn off your electronic devices. We all good? All right. To protect anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed except as recorded by the committee. Please be aware that if you're speaking or sharing, and please be aware of that if you're speaking or sharing and say your first name. Your voice will be audible on the recording, and you must sign the release on the table, which is here. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. I need someone to time, first of all, with someone. Excellent. And I also need someone who's interested in reading the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
I was standing up. Hi, I'm Susan, compulsive overeater. I need those ones. Okay. 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
The format for this 55-minute session is as follows. I will share for 10 to 15 minutes on the topic, followed by open sharing. Again, the topic for this session is Steps 8 and 9, Self-Discipline and Love. I will now share my experience, strength, and hope on the topic. And I was just going to say, can I have 10, 3, and 2? Thank you. Hi. Once again, my name is Corey, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hello. It's great to be here. I want to thank Diane, the committee member, who asked me to come and speak. It's an honor. And what I'll just say first of all is speaking at events like this has helped me get really connected in this program. So I come to birthday parties, and I can say I've seen all of your faces, and I probably know almost all of your names. So it helps me feel really connected. So steps 8 and 9, I wanted to do those first, I have to tell you, when I came into program, because I thought those were the ones that were going to make me look good. And took me a long time to realize that's why we do 6 and 7 before 8 and 9, so we can get some help right-sizing our egos before we jump into making amends and potentially do some really injurious things, which I think I did. Depending on the state of my ego, we'll see if I'll get into those or not. I'm kidding. It felt like, you know, the stories that you hear about people who they make amends and they're afraid they're going to get thrown in prison and then everything turns out okay. And I didn't have any of those kinds of amends. I had financial amends to make, but they weren't, you know, I never embezzled millions of dollars from a company or anything, but I definitely stole stuff from stores, and I did things like that, and I didn't think First of all, I didn't think I would ever admit that to another human being. Those were like take to the graves kind of grave kinds of things. And I didn't really see how my sharing those things with another human being and then going back and making restitution really mattered. Like I didn't, and it was so symbolic and parallel with how much I thought I mattered in the world. But I didn't see that. I just thought, well, that doesn't matter. Why do I feel like crap about myself? I don't matter in the world. And I couldn't see, I was just too foggy, probably from food and other things, to be able to see the polarities in that. Not the polarities, the similarities in that. So when I finally got to step nine the right way after doing the first seven and then doing eight and nine together, when I finally got there, I started making a list. And the first thing I have to say about eight and nine for me tangibly is that I once heard somebody from another program say, if you do the steps right, you only have to go through them one time. And I'm not a proponent of that, and I don't need to argue about it, but I just don't think for me, I wasn't clear enough when I went through the steps the first time to remember. And I just thought of something a couple weeks ago that I thought, oh, yeah, you know what? I didn't put that on any of my eight-step lists. That has to go on my list. So I made this list that at the time was a pretty searching and fearless list of the amends that I needed to make in the world. And if I had taken a list and gone out in the world and made them myself, I would have done them very differently than getting feedback from my sponsor on how to do certain things. There were certain amends I was directed not to make, some painful ones where I really wanted to go make amends so I could reconnect with people that I really had no business connecting with. And my sponsor at the time said that that the amends really was to not make that amends directly. That was about a living amends, and that was to not reconnect and open up old wounds where old wounds didn't need to get connected and opened up. So I've shared this couple of these amends many times from the podium, but one of the more powerful amends that I made was that I had so much shame about. When I was in grammar school, I used to steal money from my teachers out of their purse. Like in physical education, when we were all out on the yards, I would go back to the locker room, ask to use the bathroom, and then take money out of my teacher's purse. Now, I don't know what I needed all that money for, other than food. I mean, duh. But I wasn't raised in a poor home. I wasn't deprived. I wasn't starved. But there was something. There was an addict part of me that was thinking more is better. If I get this money, then I'll be okay. If I get this money and I can buy my food, or I can have enough money to be able to buy food anytime I needed to. So I started stealing money, and I don't think she ever knew. Maybe she knew that somebody was. I don't think she ever knew. I certainly never got in trouble for it. So many years later, I made my list, talked about it with a sponsor, and then I went back to that grammar school, and she happened to still teach there. And it was a Friday afternoon, and oh my God, that was fast. Five? Okay. And so her class happened to be watching a movie while I went there, the time that I went there. And so she came out in the hallway, and while her kindergartners watched a movie, and we were chatting, and I said, hey, you know, I don't know if you know this, but when I was in your gym class in grammar school, I used to take money from your purse. I would go to the restroom in your office and take money from your purse. And I've come to make amends, and I wrote you a check. And I wrote it for, you know, I probably stole $5 from her, and I wrote a check for $20 and figured interest and all that. And she said, are you here to make amends? And I said, yes. And she said, are you in a 12-step program? And I said, yes. And she said, you know, I really need to go to Overeaters Anonymous. Do you know where I might find a meeting? And she didn't know that I was in OA. At the time, I didn't look like someone who maybe was here. And then the conversation changed in a whole other direction. So she lived in Pasadena, and I lived in West LA at the time. And I said to her that I'll send her a meeting schedule for Pasadena, and if she wants to go to a meeting, to give me a call. And she never did. Maybe she went, maybe she didn't. But she got to see how the program works, And that, I'm not saying, like, look at me, this is how the program works. God was working in my life, and so I just follow the direction. There's 12 steps. I thought it probably works well if you work them all. Once I learned you need to work them in order, I was in even better shape. And so I went back, and we got to connect about Overeaters Anonymous, this teacher and I. And it carried with me. I carried that with me for a long time. And also, it you know, I don't even remember. I mean, I was abstinent at the time, and I couldn't even tell you what my food thoughts were before that. But it lifted something in me. Like my gait and step changed a little bit after making that because I connected with another compulsive overeater who hopefully I carried the message to. So I've had those kinds of amends that were like, I took money, here's the money. And then I've also had other sort of more process amends. Like a couple years ago, I said something to a friend of mine, a very, very, very dear friend of mine, that seemed like a very benign comment to me, and I really hurt my friend's feelings. And I didn't understand why I hurt her feelings. And she was very angry with me and didn't talk to me for a while and then called me and let me know that I had hurt her feelings. And I said, well, I don't understand why that would have hurt your feelings. I mean, and I have a lot of time in program, right? That's a kind of a shameful thing. But I thought, and then I said, well, you know, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And what I was missing so much, right? So... And so we didn't talk again for a couple of weeks, and it was a dear friend, and I really missed her. And finally I called her back, and I said, you know, with the longevity of our friendship, I would think that you would know that my intentions are good. And she said, you don't get it, do you? You may not have been hurt by what you said, but I'm your friend, and I was hurt by what you said. And that's all I need you to see. Is that what you said hurt me? Not whether it would hurt you, whether it would hurt somebody else, whether you take a poll, people in the world get hurt. Maybe I'm sensitive, maybe I'm not, but you hurt my feelings. And in that moment, I got it. And I got to make a living amends with her and also with other people in the world who I would have had that same experience with. And it actually was more than a couple years ago because that happened about a year or two before I met my now wife, and there would have been so many times in my relationship with my wife where I had to catch myself doing that, but where I thought to myself, I almost just said what I've learned is really injurious in a relationship, and I'm so glad that I learned that so I didn't have to hurt somebody else with that. And when I finally got it with my friend, and I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry, because I kept on saying, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, but don't you understand, you know? And I learned, I had heard people for years in programs say, if your amends includes the word but, then it's not really a true amends. And I thought, maybe, maybe not, I don't understand, you know? And I kept on saying, I'm sorry for what I said, but don't you understand that I didn't mean it? And when I finally got it with this friend, I said to her, I'm so sorry that I hurt your feelings. End of story. And I started to cry, and she started to cry, and I got it. I hurt her feelings. So is that 10?
That was 10 now. I'm gonna do.
Okay, and then 3 and 2. So, you know, one of the things that it talks about in our literature, in the big book, are the 9-step promises. And I... there's this great thing that the LA Inner Group does every year where they do a promises meeting every holiday time. And it used to be real candles, and now it's pretend candles, but it's still illuminating in all of its way. And I'm a bit of a pyromaniac, so it's good for people like me, but for addicts like me. But I used to go to that meeting, and people would talk about receiving these promises. Like, I got this promise in my life, and they're all coming true for me. And I thought... it was part of my addict thinking that you get someplace where you arrive. Like, I thought, you know, of all the things that I thought in my life, I thought, you know, when you get to be an adult, then you're going to arrive. Like, I thought that when I was a kid. And then, you know, when I bought my condo, when I'm a property owner, have I arrived? You know, I've got married, have I arrived? And so I thought, you get these promises and you've arrived. Like, you have these promises. And they're just, I forgot that everything that we have here is, for me, is contingent on a fit spiritual condition. And and continuing to make amends wherever needed, you know, in the world, and making amends in a way that's really about amending my behavior and not about trying to skirt out of something that maybe makes me look bad so you don't think I look so bad, or maybe you don't, you know, you think about me the way I want you to think about me. And what I've learned over the years, I guess in working the ninth step ongoing and, you know, working it formally every time I work through the steps, which I'm starting again, is that the ninth step promises, and I don't have them in front of me and I can't quote them all, but things like fear of financial insecurity will leave me. It doesn't mean financial insecurity will leave me. It just means the fear of it will leave me. I didn't imagine how that could ever be true for me, or fear of people. I couldn't imagine how, whether I was financially secure or not, however I could not be afraid, you know, how I could not be afraid that I might be someday. Like, I just had so much fear about that. And I have to tell you, somewhere along the way, in continuing to work the steps and coming to meetings and doing all the things that we do, I no longer have the kind of huge anxiety attacks that I used to have about money. So do I ever, is there ever a day where I'm not, you know, I don't have a fear that comes up about money? No, it happens for me, but the kind of paralyzing fear that I used to have about money, or the kind of paralyzing fear that I used to have with people, or, you know, any of that stuff has lifted. And it's not that I don't have that, but it's that it doesn't take me over like it used to. So I have 2 minutes. So what else can I tell you? So, you know, one of the things that I didn't get, I really thought, like I said in the beginning, you know, I thought when you work the nine-step amends, people are going to think, oh, what a great person. Wow. She should be the next pope, you know. Never mind that she's Jewish and a lesbian, but the next pope. And I didn't get that it wasn't about that. What I didn't really get was it's about setting me and other people free and of the bondage of, like, I don't know. So there's one of the promises that says no matter how far down the scale we've gone, which I thought meant literally a scale, because we're in OA. Even though it's in the big book of AA, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And some of you know that I had a huge loss in my family in the last couple of years. And not many people have that same kind of content that I had in terms of my loss. And I've always been pretty compassionate about people who have lost people in program. But it gave me, that experience gave me the ability to be able to relate when other people are talking about loss in meetings, you know, to really be able, or if people call me for outreach calls, to be really be able to witness people's pain around loss and not compare it to my loss, or not think, well, you don't know what loss is, sister, you know, just be able to be there and witness each other's pain. That's what, I suppose that's a living amends too, in a way. You know, I was raised around a lot of, like, not literally, but sort of emotionally cycle of violence, like rage and then apologies and then walking on eggshells for a while and then rage. And I wasn't, and that was sort of, that apology, that was how I learned about apologies, was like, you do something horrible to somebody, then you apologize, and then they're supposed to forgive you, and that's supposed to be linear. Is that my time? So, anyway, take what you like and leave the rest. That's my share. Thanks. Okay, so the meeting is now open for 3-minute pitches. Please focus your share on the topic and limit your sharing to 3 minutes to give others a chance to share. This meeting will end at 4:55, and I will stop us at 4:50. So who would like to share?
Hi, my name is Eileen, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for your share. It has been a pretty intense day, right? And I've been here this morning, and I've been listening to these amazing pitches today about how, you know, God has you in a place, and then something, you know, you come in contact with something, And then it was like it was meant to be. So there's this old friend of mine who I was friends with her in high school, and we kind of drifted apart. And she had contacted me about her mother passing, and I was not in program, and I wasn't a very good friend. And we became not friends, and we're like Facebook friends, but we're not like friends. So there is somebody at this conference who actually is related to her. So but let me back up. So about when I was doing my amends a few years ago, I emailed her and I said, "Your mom passed, and I'm really sorry that I was not the friend that I should have been to you." Because she had shared with me how upset she was, and I didn't get it. I didn't understand really a lot of this before I entered program about what being a really good friend meant, aside from my ego having to do with me. And so I ran into this person, and I'm like, "Oh, well, you know," I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm like, what the hell, I should say, "Oh, you know, I know this person, you know that person." And so he said, "Well, let me call her." So he calls her on the phone, and he's like, "Here you go." And I was like, "Ah, hi." And, you know, I said, "Oh, you know, let's connect. Let me make sure I have your number." And so, you know, what I've really learned today is that, you know, maybe there's a reason that I ran into, you know, I haven't seen him in years, and maybe there's a reason that I need to reconnect, and that I'm going to call her, and maybe we'll get together, and maybe we can be friends again. But I know that if I had never made that amends because of this program, that I wouldn't have learned how to be a good friend to her. And it's just very, like, I believe that after this whole day about things not being consequences and things happening for a reason, that maybe this is a new path for me. Maybe this is going to open up. And it never would have happened unless I would have set my ego aside and apologized and taken responsibility for my part in that. So that's all I wanted to share.
So just a quick note that if you share, you have to sign the release because you're going to be on the tape. Okay. So who else wants to share?
Yeah, Jill.
Hi, I'm Jill, a compulsive overeater and a 100-pounder.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, thank you, Corey. It's always a pleasure and a treat to hear you and see you, so thank you. So what do I want to say? I want to say that I'm maintaining a 160-pound weight loss. I came in the rooms a little over 7 years ago at 327 pounds, but that's not the gig. What I want to say is that is the most uninteresting part of my journey for me. What's interesting to me is the relationship that I have with my now 39-year-old son today as a result of the ninth step. That's what I want to talk about. And that's the true gift of the program. It's not about the weight loss to me. It's about the relationships that I have today that are such a gift to me, as a result of the ninth step. And when I made amends to my son, it was a letter that I put together with my sponsor's help. And I wrote it in letter form because there were so many things that I wanted to say. And I wanted to make it right and certainly include God in that letter. And so it turned out to be in letter form. And it was also important for me not to have it be like war and peace. You know, I wasn't going to be like pages and pages and pages of just stuff. It was to the point, and it was all about love. And so he lives up in Lake Tahoe, and I was up there, and I read him the letter, and we were sitting right on the marina, and it was probably the most beautiful moment I've had in my recovery. And my relationship with him completely changed, and as a result today, I have a relationship with my 5 grandchildren, and who, you know, and I get to go on the trampoline with my 5 grandchildren, you know, and that's what abstinence is about to me today. It's not about the food. It's not about lunch. It's not about my weight loss. It's not about any of that. It's about the relationships that I have today. Most importantly, my sons, which is a true gift of the program. So thank you.
What?
Someone came in called Beverage?
Not
Anyone else want to share?
Just hit start. Hi, I'm Susan Compulsive-Overita. Thank you so much. And I love how I seem to hear that no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we all think the same thing, and yet never really comprehended that an alcoholic wrote this. He wasn't thinking about going down the scale. But every time I hear it, it's like, yes, I wasn't the only one, because that's all I thought about was going down the scale. And I loved, first of all, I love everything I've heard. I've spent a lot of time in this room today, and we've heard some wonderful things, and what I've really heard is brutal honesty. And I've learned here that just a little bit of honesty wasn't enough to get me where I am today. It had to be brutal, it had to be radical, it had to be very, very life-changing. I loved your story about your friend and the amends, because I was always, I'm sorry, but if I can make you understand where I'm coming from, if you understand me, you will be okay, because let me tell you how I've grown up and what's happened to me. And I love how suddenly our hearing is so clear. It's just unbelievable. And that's why all the words in here, I was looking through the promises, were painstaking. Not just if you work hard, but painstaking really strips me apart from the inside out. It did me anyway. And, you know, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Everybody does look different to you. They look different, everything that they say. I said earlier when I was standing up here sharing that I've read this book so many times, and each time I read it, I swear they've put something new in there that I didn't read before, or I skipped a page or something, and it is so beautiful. First of all, we live in Southern California, so if you're making amends to somebody, there isn't anyone who doesn't know anyone in the 12-step meeting, so they normally know how to behave. But it's so freeing, and that's the amazing thing, because it's so, you know, when you start on step one, it's like, oh, I hope that one never ever comes, because how am I going to do this, how am I going to do that? But then by the time I've done my fourth step and I'm guided, because for me, I have to work with someone who can guide me through this. I can't do this book on my own, who tells you to do this with dignity and grace and shows you how they did it. It isn't so bad. Do you swear the back of your neck? Absolutely. You know, feeling a lot of butterflies, but you're okay. You get through it. And when I did my amends, you know, also I got to see where I needed to make them and where I didn't, because I was guided again. I couldn't have done it on my own. I wouldn't have known. And one of the things that my sponsor had me do when I started working with her, you know, over 10 years ago, and I'd already done my steps twice with someone else, she was listening a lot to things about my childhood, and she said, you need to write a letter of amends to yourself. And I didn't, what do you mean? And she said, because I hear, and this is what I hear, and this is what I see, and that was a really, really powerful letter, and she shared this letter with me that some of you may know of or not in the room. It's called the Dear Paula letter, and it's about this woman, Paula, who wrote an amends to herself. I don't know if she's real, fictional, but apologizing to herself for all the things that she thought were her fault in her life. And just to share, you know, it was a very, very powerful thing for me. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Anyone else? For those listening at home, there are no hands. Did you?
Yes, and nobody would raise their
hands. That's bold. All right, so I'm going to start calling on people if nobody raises their hands. So, and it's a very small room. I think we have time to get to everybody. So she'll go for it.
I'm Alex, a compulsive overeater. So I'm actually on step 9 right now, and I guess I'll just share what my process has been so far. The first letter I wrote, because it was to a former therapist, and I'm in therapy now with somebody else, was apologizing to a therapist who I thought I had put through the ringer when I was younger by being rebellious and breaking agreements. And I kind of postponed it at first. I procrastinated, but I did get it in the mail, and I sent it out, and I felt relief afterwards. And I don't know if I'll ever hear back from this person or not. Probably not, because I'm in therapy with someone else, and he knows not to – it's not like a friendship. but it was still a relief just to get it off my chest. And then I'm in the process of writing a letter now to another therapist, who was also sort of a primary therapist when I was away at college. And again, I felt that he used to say that I was fighting him every step of the way, and that I wasn't hearing what he was saying, and that I was so angry and so resentful that I couldn't be assuaged. And I was apologizing to him in the letter, sort of a rough draft that I wrote for that, and also kind of reiterating to him, this is what I heard you say and what I can process now. And it's kind of hard to remember all of it without actually seeing the letter in front of me, but I'll try to remember some of it. I basically heard him say to me, I had a premise in college that wasn't true. And the premise was that if you look physically beautiful, you're destined to have happiness and fulfillment in life. And if you don't, or if you are disabled, then you're destined to get the short end of the stick. And that's not true. Because if you look at it from a scientific perspective, there are plenty of people who are not, by conventional standards, physically gorgeous, but who have wonderful lives and relationships. If you were to go to Central, used to say this all the time, and I couldn't hear it, go to Central Park on a Sunday and observe the couples walking by. You're going to see men in wheelchairs, and you'll see them going by with their wives and their children. And you'll see men who have big noses, and they'll be walking by with their girlfriends, or men who weigh 200 pounds and are okay with that at the moment and are in relationships. And if you look at it from the other flip side, who was one of the most physically gorgeous women in the past 50 years? Marilyn Monroe. If my premise were true, she'd be dancing the night away in some exclusive Hollywood hideaway along with James Dean. It just isn't true. And so basically getting back to the ninth step, and I'm going to wrap up, I said in my letter to him that I'm going to send, I can hear that now, and I apologize for being difficult at the time, and it really is a relief and purgative. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you for letting me share.
And Lynn, do you want to share?
I'm Lynn, compulsive overeater. God, you know, I haven't done the eighth and ninth step in a really long time. I got a new sponsor about 6 months ago, I guess, and we're going through the big book a paragraph at a time. So I'm only on, I think, the third or fourth chapter. Anyway, I'm not up to my eighth or ninth step. But I remember when I did it years ago, when I was doing my fourth step inventory, and I made a list of all my resentments, and then I used that list to make a list of my eighth step. So it came in handy. But most of my amends was to myself, how I treated myself and how I thought about myself. I was cash register honest, except I stole a lot of food. But I didn't steal money, and made my amends. So, it definitely was freeing and to move on. This program has just taught me how to live my life. And today, I keep my side of the street clean as best I can. And I do a 10 step every night. And if I see that there is something that I need to make an amends on, I do it. Pretty quickly, because I don't like living in that state of agita. You know, there's, it's just, that's not my norm anymore. It used to be my norm, and it's just not my norm anymore. And I'm grateful that this program has taught me how to live my life and to keep my side of the street clean, because I really don't like making the amends, but I do them. And I'm not perfect, and that's okay. So that's it. Thanks.
Someone, one of you three in the back of the room? Anybody?
Hi. John, compulsive overeater. So yeah, it's been so good being here at this really fabulous event, my first birthday party. It's really good for me to sit and listen, because then the log jam, the ice jam in my head starts melting. I'm working on the eighth step now, and something that is so important is, for me, is self-forgiveness. Because, yeah, I'm all set to forgive others, but fuck, I'm the one who has really, really liked to beat myself up over the years with the shame and the disgust at things I've done. And an exceptional moment this morning, I'm so thankful for it. I was at Kitchen Sink, a meeting we have in Hollywood, and I do coffee with another fellow. And it really took us a long time to get in the building, and the coffee was not ready for a meeting. So the young fellow who unlocked the building, I really kind of went off on. I told him, hey, we pay rent, and we're supposed to be in here, yada, yada, yada. Well, I thank God that the little caution flag went up my mind, telling me, hey, John, you messed up here. And there was a good friend of mine who's also a fellow with me, and I bounced it off him, and I said, yeah, I think that's true. So I didn't have to go hunt this fellow down. It's a big complex where we have the meeting. He happened to be standing there when we came out of the kitchen with the coffee. And I apologized to him. And that's when the miracles are programmed for me. It's becoming easier to say I'm sorry to somebody. Instead of your thanks, Corey, it was a great share. And really, I'm forgetting what I was going to say. I'm sorry. Another senior moment right out the window. But that's the great miracle of program, is that ability to forgive not only others, but to forgive myself. Because if I don't take care of myself in the best way possible, I can't do anything for anybody else. When it's time to sponsor, if I don't love myself enough to be able to not only give, but to receive what the sponsee has to give me, then what's my point in being programmed? And the last thing is rigorous honesty. I've heard that, so thankful, I've heard that mentioned just about every meeting I've been in, how important that is to be brutally rigorous. Because if I'm not that with my sponsor, with my fellows, or in life with people I know, then once again, I am really screwed when it comes to program, when it comes to life. So thank God for program. Thanks for listening to my share.
Holly, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Corey, for your share. I'm kind of in a funny place with step 8 and 9. I have, I made my first run through the steps. I made amends, and they were. It's not that they were superficial, but they were a lot of financial amends, and I got to make amends to my dad. But a lot of it was financial. I didn't murder anybody or do anything like that, but. In successive times of going through the steps, more things have come up. I mean, in all the steps, but more things have come up. And I have an amends to make that. Boy, have I tried to make that amends. And it's not happening. And I've carried it in my wallet for a while. Just a little, not happening. So as I go through the steps again, though, more things come up. And it's interesting that... all of a sudden, after 11 years, this time through, amends to myself came up. I've never talked about it with another sponsor. I have a different sponsor now, and it came up in the book that we were reading, Amends to Myself, and I thought, wow, what is that about? What's that going to be like? Do I need to do that? And I also have got more now, more amends, because, as life goes on, not a lot more, thank God, but there's different thoughts, and I have different life experiences now than I've had. So just that thing of going through them again, going through the steps and working, and then something will come up, something will happen, and it makes something from the past come up, and I get to write out an amends or make an amends. But the nice thing is it's not up to me. It's up to me and my sponsor usually reminds me of kind of puts it on a level of importance and what do we need to do next, which is what works the best for me. What's next now? So we talked a little bit about amends to myself, and we'll talk more. But the whole process of the steps, and especially making amends, is really powerful. And it gets that stuff, you know, that's sitting on my chest out, whether it's words or money or whatever it is. You know, the money's pretty much done, but it's the rest of the stuff that just continuing to work the program is such a gift. So thanks for letting me share, and thank you.
Okay, so we have time for two more shares, and there are three people in the room that haven't shared. So come.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michelle.
Thank you, Corey. Thanks for your share. I'm working steps 8 and 9 right now, and so I made a list from my fourth step and the list of the people and what the actual harms are. And when I came in and I saw the steps on the wall, when I read steps 8 and 9, I was like, there's no way I'm doing that, especially when I came in. I was doing some really hurtful things to people I worked with and people in my family and my friends. And I just thought, like, I am not, you know, like, so when I get to that, maybe I'll just, you know, like, I'll just skip them. It's okay. And I would talk to my sponsor about it, you know, like, I can't do those. I can't. And she said, you know, it's okay. You're only on step one. And I was like, okay. But, in doing the writing and the list, and listening to all of you, I'm okay with that now, and I'm okay with my sponsor directing me on what to do. And the thing that came up for me that I think is the most, the thing that I feel the worst about, or that I'm like most frightened of making this amends, is something that I stole when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I stole something from a friend's house when I was there for a birthday party, and it was something that had a great sentimental value to their family. And like, I've been living with that for, you know, 40 years. It's been sitting, you know, inside of me, and it's something that like, I'm looking forward now to getting that out and getting that off my chest. And I just trust that, you know, like, all of you that have walked through this before me, like, that your experiences give me hope that this is the right thing to do. And I know it is, but it's just it's my first time, so I just want to thank everybody for sharing.
You haven't shared, and you haven't shared. I forgive you.
Thank you. My name is Bobby. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Hi. I did 8 and 9 a long time ago. But right now, not but, and, because but negates, your share was wonderful. I came in very late, but I loved everything you said, and I related to a lot of what you said about the friend and so forth. I, right at this moment, am not ready to make an amend to my sister, which I sort of did, but she didn't really accept it. And it was what you said, Corey. Where she's hurt because I told the truth about something, and she's not getting it. She's not getting it. She's playing the Jewish guilt card on me, that I hurt her, I disappointed her, and I said, I'm sorry that I, but this is how I feel. I told the truth. I told the truth. And yet we have not spoken now for like 5.5, 6 months. And I keep saying to all of my friends, I'm not doing the olive branch. I didn't do anything wrong. And yet, if I'm brutally honest, which of course now, of course, I realize, and I've only been in program for 39 years, today, listening to this fabulous meeting, I have to pray for the willingness to be ready to put the olive branch out, because I have done it for many, many years with her. She's my older sister, and I was the young one who always made nice and, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I'm not there yet. And it's hurting me. I'm sure it's hurting her. And also my boss, which, again, I have to do it for me. I don't like her, by the way. I don't like her. She's not a nice person. But I have to remember, if I'm going to be brutally honest and work my program to the best of my ability, I have to reach out in a business sense, if you will, and make an amend without her not even realizing it. It's just be nicer, be pleasant, understand where she's coming from, and so forth. So I'm just going to say I'm very grateful to also that everyone has shared. It's just made me take a look at what I need to do, which is turn to my higher power and pray for willingness to be willing today. Thank you.
Okie doke. Approximately 5 minutes for the end of the session. It is now time to close the session. I would like to thank those of you who gave service at this session and all of you for attending. After a moment of silence, please join hands as we close with the Serenity Prayer. The Serenity Prayer.